worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I can't wait to share that with you. Oh, man. But
this is our first official spooky season episode.
It is.
Then?
Okay. I'm so excited. Yeah.
I can't wait. We're recording on the 13th. It's not Friday the 13th, but it's the 13th, so it still counts.
Heck yeah, it does. And it's funny because, well, I don't know if we want to really share that, but maybe we could as a teaser. But the one episode coming out on October the 13th.
Tease away, friend.
That's our listener tale episode. That's coming out on October the 13th. So,
yeah, stay tuned for that. Oh, yeah. I love those episodes. I love the involvement of our listeners. We've been getting some good stories sent in. So it's a great way to incorporate our listeners into the show. We love you guys. So stay tuned for that. You.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. We're so excited. We try to do something a little different every year. I feel like we try to really lean into spooky paranormal type things for spooky season, because why the fuck not?
Yeah.
I mean, it's macabre, but man, I'm so excited. Yeah. Today's episode. I don't know. Do we want to tell them the itinerary for spooky season? Do we want to tell them our episode list?
No, just let it be a surprise.
Okay. Well, they know they're getting the, I mean, we do a listener tale every season for this time of year, but today you're going to be like, oh, how does this fit in? But we decided that it was going to be kind of a funny topic. And, you know, when this gets released, because we're batch recording right now, I know that a lot of listeners that have been hanging out with us for a while, they kind of know what's coming up. But Hallie and I both have some pretty huge life changes happening at the moment. So we're going to do this, but it's for everybody on Patreon right now. If you can see the baggage under my eyes, man, I could fly first class with these bags under these eyes. So we're doing the thing, you know, but today, I can't wait. But okay, before I get too ahead of myself, hey, everybody, welcome to Macabre, a dark history podcast. I'm Blair.
I'm Hallie.
And we're so freaking happy that you came to hang out with us today. And of course, as always, thank you for choosing Macabre as your entertainment of the hour. If you're new here, because we see you, welcome. We're so happy you found us, and we're happy that you're here hanging with us, and we hope you enjoy, because you're in for a wild ride for spooky season. And remember, as always, this show is not for the faint of heart, and negative energy is not allowed. So grab your spooky squeegee, because it's time for some housekeeping. If you want a little more from us, I just mentioned we are on Patreon, where you can see my eye baggage up close and personal. Just kidding. You don't want to pay for that, but you do get early and ad-free listening. You can also join in different tiers. You could be a looky-loo, a freaky friend, a deadly darling over there.
Ooh, speaking of, shout out. We've added a few new members this month. So thank you so much to Autumn. Thank you, Autumn. Autumn, thank you, what a beautiful Autumn. Name.
It is.
Perfect time of year. Heck my favorite time of year.
Heck
who is a new freaky friend. And shout out to Melanie, who also joined our freaky friend tier. So thank you so much for supporting the show. We hope you guys are enjoying it over there. And if you have any suggestions for episodes or topics that might be a little off the wall that you want us to cover that we wouldn't normally do on the main platform, then give us a shout.
Heck yeah. We would be happy to hear what you've got. Welcome, Autumn and Melanie, for being freaky friends. We love you guys. Yeah, and you can also join us on our Facebook group, where you can be part of our fam with more terrific people like yourself. It's really fun over there, and if you want a great laugh, those are the freaking people. I'm telling you, they're hilarious.
That's your daily dose of macabre. And you, many dose of macabre each day.
Yeah, it's great. The people over there are freaking phenomenal. Also, tell a friend, tell a bored coworker, and yes, even your mom.
You said tell a friend.
Yeah.
This is the biggest way you can get the show out there. Mm-hmm. I did the math. And if all of our followers just on Spotify would tell one person to listen and they became a listener, you would single-handedly put us in the top 1% of all podcasts,
oh,
people.
Oh my gosh.
Get your weirdest friend who loves dark stuff, weird stuff, creepy stuff. Tell them about the show. Tell them to sign up for Spotify, and you will single-handedly put us in the top 1% of all podcasts.
That is so crazy. You guys are freaking amazing. I can't believe
you make the show. You single-handedly make this show what it is.
Holy crap. You guys rock. I still can't believe I do a podcast, let alone where we're at. But yes, tell someone, because, I mean, it's that time of year anyway, but also it's just fun to hang out with people. Also, you can now show off your stuff in true macabre fashion. Just so you know, we have merch now, thanks to Gothic Threads. That is Gothic with two C's, gothicthreads.com. Yeah, buddy. You can rock a Vlad or Frankenstein metal band tee, or you can serve a stiff drink to your friends at your next party in a whiskey glass with our logo on it. It's pretty cool. Anyway, all of our links and ways to reach us and yada yada, they are down below in the show notes. And guess what? It is spooky season, baby. All month, we are gonna give you the spooky goodness. Our regularly scheduled broadcast program will be continued in November, but it's a celebration this month and we party hearty during spooky season. So October will be full of paranormal goodies, just so you know. And this week we are kicking it off with something a little special. It's a nice day for a macabre wedding, isn't it, Hallie?
Doesn't this come out the week of your wedding?
It does.
Perfect timing.
I know. It's
so crazy. When you're thinking about this episode, listening to this episode, just remember that Blair is tying those knots, reading those nuptials.
It's pretty crazy. I can't believe he put the ringy dingy on the fingy, but he did. Poor guy. No, just kidding. Here are my hype notes, because I'm so excited to share some of this stuff with you. It's wild. All right, we are kicking it off with tales of macabre matrimony this spooky season, haunted venues, moving dresses, deadly honeymoons, love at first fright, and other cultural marital traditions with the deceased. At the end of this episode, you'll be asking yourself, was the mannequin in the bridal shop window made of plastic or flesh? And because of the nature of these stories, we're going to play a little game of fact or fiction at the very end.
Oh, fun.
Yeah,
I love spooky games.
Right? Oh, it's so fun. And don't worry, there are macabre morsels at the end of this too. We'll get there. But why don't we start talking about a wedding dress, particularly Anna Baker's wedding dress. Does this sound familiar?
Not at all.
Oh, all right. Oh, I'm so excited for these then. So we can't really talk about Anna Baker without talking about the Baker Mansion. It's located in Altoona, Pennsylvania. It's now a historical building under the care of Blair County Historical Society. I didn't do that on purpose, okay? It is Blair without an E, just so everybody knows. But originally it was actually the home of an iron master named Elias Baker and his family. He and his wife, Hetty, had two sons when they moved in, and oh, it wasn't long before they welcomed another child into the world. It's that new home vibe.
The new home smell.
Gotta break it in somehow, you know?
Yeah, gotta fix that.
Yeah. This is when their first daughter, Anna, was born. Oh, smell. They did have another daughter later. I think her name was Marguerite, but unfortunately she did pass away at the age of 2 from diphtheria.
Oh no.
About diphtheria before.
Of the times.
Mm-hmm.
Sad.
It is sad. And later, Mr. Baker would come into financial ruin in his business, and it all stemmed together. It was one of those when it rains, it pours unfortunate times in their lives. He did manage to finish the construction of this mansion, regardless of the financial turmoil that they were going through, and he was able to enjoy the house about 15 years before his death being fully finished. Yeah, they had some pretty rough times. So he passed away in 1864 and his wife Hetty died in 1900. But in 1851, kind of stemming back to more misfortunes, their son David died in a steamboat accident when he was only 28. And he had just started a new family as well. And things were just getting more grim from there. Things were really falling apart after David's death. And just a few years after her brother's passing, Anna went to visit her father at the Elgie Furnace, which he owned. And that's when she met someone pretty handsome. He was a steel worker, and she was 18 at the time, so considered an adult. And doesn't mean anything for that time. She couldn't really pick kind of who she wanted to marry. It was still like that as a business transaction back then. But she did fall head over heels for the steam worker, which was well below what her father would have wanted for her. They started developing a secret relationship. Things were like, ooh, a little bit of scandal. But they went on this for 2 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a long time to be able to keep that sort of a secret.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially for the time. You got to think about what that took.
Yeah. So,
Mr. Steamy Steelworker, he's got it going on. So they were together for a while. And after 2 years, Mr. Steamy decides that he's going to pop the question. And she was ecstatic. She was planning the wedding behind her dad's back. He still didn't know about it. She went and bought a wedding dress. And it was gorgeous. She loved it to pieces. And as soon as they basically finished making all of their plans, they were going to just flee the state of New York. Like, they were going to avoid all of that. They were going to get hitched and run away so that Mr. Baker couldn't find out. And when he did, way too late. But before they could truly go through with it, and one of the steel workers told Elias about his daughter's plans because he knew the other steel worker very well. And he had overheard some things being said.
What the hell? Why you gotta be like that?
Just steamy cock block. No. Yeah, he was livid when he found out. He fired Mr. Steamy and he was throwing death threats at him if he ever even came back to Altoona. Like, he forced him out of the town. Yeah, that bad. And Elias came back home and immediately found his daughter and told her that she would never speak to the ex-employee ever again. He went through her room and just stripped it of everything. He burned all of the keepsakes and letters that they had between each other. Like, there was nothing left except the wedding dress, which she had stored in a trunk hidden away enough. After the incident, Anna went into a really deep depression. She locked herself in her room. She was refusing to eat and speak to anybody. It was really bad. And she was doing this for basically the rest of her life. When her father did pass away years later, she saw this as her chance to try to find her fiance. And it was way too late. By the time she did actually find Mr. Steamy, he had already married and already had a family.
Oh, man.
And this was like the last straw for her. She went back home. She locked herself in her room and her remaining family like never saw her. She would only come out of her room if they were all gone. And there's reports of, the staff seeing her in the hallways with her dress, dancing around, sobs, just really heartbreaking. The last of the Baker family passed away in 1907, and Anna would live for another 7 years until she also passed away in 1914. After the Baker mansion was converted into a museum, Anna's dress was encased in a glass display in her old bedroom. While many say that the entire family haunts the mansion now, many reports say that you can still hear sobbing coming from Anna's room or seeing her face through the third floor window. Creepy, but also,
I mean, neither one of those situations is good. No. I mean, you feel especially, oh man,
I know,
hearing something crying that isn't supposed to be there, really bad, also heartbreaking, but seeing someone's face at the window that's not supposed to be there, I think I would immediately swoop my pants.
Same. Immediate spoop. Oh, yeah. Mm-mm. No, thank you. Yeah, and there's other paranormal happenings within certain rooms. There's a couple of other stories about other people in the house, but of course, we're keeping it on focus on Anna right now. A lot of the paranormal activity seems to be focused around her wedding dress.
Makes sense.
Right. Some visitors claim that they see the glass of the dress display move. Some have said that they've seen the dress itself move behind the case, like somebody's trying to pull at it or something, or even see the dress out of the case and floating around the room. So, fact or fiction? We will find out later. Now we have to go to La Casa de Pascuala for our mannequin story. So, did you hear that? That was under the desk.
Did something just fall?
Yeah.
You want to take a look? Oh, no.
We're going to leave it alone for now. But I did not move, so I don't know why that happened. Negative energy is not allowed at all. Remember? Okay. We're going to talk about the story that takes place and has been taking place for many years in Chihuahua, Mexico. It is the story of Pascuala Esparza, who was the owner of a bridal dress shop called La Popular, La Casa de la Pascualita. She has owned it for some time. I don't know if it's still within the family, but it still exists. But she was the owner back in the 1920s. And in 1930, her daughter was ready to get married. And it was a very happy occasion. Her mother strived for happy marriages for all sorts of ladies coming in for their dress. But now that it was her daughter's turn, she really wanted to make sure that this was special for her and made all of her dreams come true. But on the day of her daughter's wedding, the bride was bitten by a black widow spider. Yeah. And not long after this horrific tragedy, a new mannequin was placed in the display window of La Populaire. And the townspeople said that she looked a little familiar. She looked like Pascualita, her daughter. And rumors quickly spread that the new model in the window was in fact her embalmed daughter.
Could you imagine?
Oh my gosh, no. No. The owner, till her retirement, denied these rumors, but people talked. They said the timing was weird, and we'll talk about the details about this mannequin that really people still believe she could be real. When viewed up close, there's some very unsettling details of the La Pascualita mannequin that sets her apart from other store mannequins. Her hands are very realistic. Her knuckles have creases. They have intricate palm lines like a normal hand. She has varicose veins on her legs. And she's got really defined fingernails. And it's, if you see pictures of her hands up close, this is very freaky. it's very, almost you could say Uncanny Valley, because she's so realistic, but there's something off. Like, it's
just off.
Yeah.
Did the woman ever say, because I imagine you look at collectively the mannequins, this one in particular looks very different. Did she ever back it up and say, oh, this is where I got it, or any of that? There's no other information?
No.
Okay. That's weird.
It is very weird. Yeah. When you see the pictures of her, you should look them up, because they're pretty. So the other thing to note is now that this mannequin is over 80 years old now. It's been in the window since the 30s. And it's always stayed in the window since her debut on the front. Only a select number of employees over the years have been trusted to change her dress. You saw the pictures, didn't you? I saw your face.
Yeah. What the fuck is up with her hands?
Yeah.
They're like real fingernails.
Yes.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yes. And for the 30s? But we'll talk about that. But oh, man. The fact that they only trusted a certain amount of workers for 80 years to change her, they don't move her out of the window. When they go to change her, they have a specific layer of curtains that come around the whole display area while they change her. And there is a worker, I don't know if she's still there, but she gave an interview within the last 8 years or so that she said they have to change her wardrobe twice a week. And every time they do it, she said her hands start sweating. Because she's like, there's just something not right about La Pascualita. It's very weird, she said. And the fact that, why would the legs have varicose veins?
Yeah, I don't think that's a feature that a mannequin maker would add. It's not something that women want to show off.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
It's not going to help you sell clothes, no. I don't think. I mean, you know, it sucks. We don't want to necessarily show that off if we have that. So
right.
Why would you add that to a mannequin?
Yeah, exactly. What's with the detail? Especially for then. It's just, it's so real. It's so crazy. The one coworker that said that she gets really sweaty, her hands get really sweaty when she tries to change her, she has gone on record to say that she does believe that she's a real person. But yeah, they do it behind closed curtains every single time. And oh gosh, yeah. You saw the pictures of her now. It's,
yeah.
Now, there's different superstitions about her as well. A lot of people say that she watches people come into the shop. Which, I mean, if she is a real embalmed body, those eyes obviously are going to be fake. Her eyes do have some depth and detail to them, but they're definitely fake eyes. You can tell that. But many who visit the shop say that when she watches them come in, it's not necessarily a really creepy feeling. It's just you feel like you're being watched. There's a superstition also that if a bride comes in to purchase her dress, if she purchases the dress that's on the mannequin the day that the bride walks in, it's said that she's actually in for amazing luck for her wedding day and a very good marital future. Multiple brides have come forward to say that, which is interesting.
That seems a little bit like a marketing tactic.
It does.
Me.
It does.
So I don't know about that.
Keep that in mind for later. I feel like they're using that also to their advantage, but, you know, interesting, you know? But even today, the store owner and employees still take very huge precautions when changing La Pascualita. Now, whether that's because she's a major business asset that sets them apart from literally any other bridal shop in the world, or if there's something else going on, that remains a mystery. So does that mean that she's a real body? We'll see about that. Our next story takes us on a deadly honeymoon to Old Faithful Inn in Yellowstone National Park. This inn, is over 120 years old. It still stands. You can still go and visit and stay the night. It does look pretty cool in there, so I highly recommend it. I kind of want to put that on my bucket list. Also, if you've never been to Yellowstone National Park, highly recommend it. It's really beautiful out there. And don't even get me started about the time I got stuck in a bathroom because of a roaming buffalo.
We'll save that for Patreon.
Yeah, exactly. When Old Faithful Inn opened their doors for the very first time for the very first guests, it was on June 1st of 1904. And it's a historical symbol that you can still check out the grounds today with a couple of interesting takes for what you can see from the old ages and what they've kept. It's a really cool time capsule, but you can also witness some macabre things over there. That's where our story comes in. We got to go back to 1915 for this bad boy, but the story goes that a young woman from New York married a male servant against her father's wishes. There seems to be a theme here. It seems like that's how it always goes. Eventually, he gave in on the condition that he would give one smaller lump sum for a type of dowry situation, and then they had get the F out of New York and never show their faces again kind of deal. They were okay with this, and they decided that they were going to head out west for their honeymoon. And they ended up at Yellowstone National Park, where they reserved room 127 at the Old Faithful Inn. Now, on their journey west, the groom began to show his true colors. He was a completely different person. He started getting more agitated. He started drinking very heavily, gambling. Eventually, by the time they ended up at the Old Faithful Inn, he had gambled away all of the money that her father had given them. Well, she didn't know what to do at this point. And he would go out and leave her in the room. And she knew exactly what he was doing. He was just going to drink and gamble more of what they didn't have, which led to arguments and knockout, drag-out fights that the staff witnessed and heard coming from their room. And some guests were kind of upset about it. Didn't really know what to do. They knew that they were on their honeymoon. Well, after a little while, things got more intense. And one day, some of the staff saw the husband storm out of the hotel and he never came back. Which, good riddance.
But
unfortunately, they felt really bad for the bride because they were seeing what he was doing. And this is not her fault. This is just a mess. So they wanted to give her some time by herself and let her have the room and deal with emotions and everything. Well, after a few days, nobody had seen her leave the room. People stopped hearing things coming from the room. So the staff decided that they were going to check on her, and nobody answered when they knocked. So they forced the door open. And when they came in, they didn't see anybody in the room. So they went off to the water closet in the bathroom area, and they found her in the tub, covered in blood. And her head was missing.
Wait, that's not the direction I thought this was going to go.
Yeah, it escalated quickly. Yeah.
She wasn't able to do that herself, so...
Nope.
Okay.
They were trying to find her head, obviously, because it wasn't in the room. Well, after a couple more days, guests started reporting smells coming from a certain area on the grounds of inn. And
yeah,
that's where they found her head. So not long after that, people started reporting hearing and seeing weird things coming from that room and also around the inn. And the big thing that people were reporting was seeing a woman dressed in white slowly descending the stairs with her head tucked under her arm. And a lot of people were unsettled by this because it looked very real. She didn't look a full, what you would expect an apparition. She looked like a solid being.
Yeah.
So it was pretty disturbing for guests. But is the story true? We'll have to see about that. If you think what we have talked about has been kind of weird and crazy, oh, just wait. I call this one, you don't need a divorce. You need an exorcism.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, the Brocata story. So we have to go to Oxfordshire, England for this one. There was a woman that, I can't wait to get into this one. One night, on a dark and stormy night, you might say, she was laying in bed when suddenly a ghost burst through her bedroom door. Okay?
Okay.
Let this sink in. The ghost took hold of her and she felt a tingling sensation go through her body from head to toe. Some were, allegedly, very pleasant indeed. She was both terrified and intrigued. I'd be more terrified. She tried to reach behind her to turn her bedside lamp on, and a force threw her arm back to her body side. Then it felt like somebody was breathing on her neck, very hot breath, and really, really close to her ear, she heard a voice whisper, "I love you." And then before it abruptly vanished, tingles and all, it was gone. But she might have been in love.
Disappointed affection.
Disappointed infection. Affection.
Disappointed affection. Committed.
Committed. After that night, she started experiencing more things with this said entity. She was definitely feeling a ghostly presence. And this evolved into seeing glimpses of said presence. Sound familiar? Sounds like somebody might be possessed.
Yeah, I mean, it's that incubus situation, right? Yes. That's what I'm picking up.
Yep. I'm feeling that too. And after a while, she claimed that she knew this entity. And she claimed that it was a Victorian soldier named Eduardo. She was getting deets on this guy. And she described him as being, quote, devilishly handsome. Yes.
Okay.
Apparently he had shoulder-length, dark, messy hair. And pretty, pretty handsome. So they soon develop a relationship now. She's in for this. And the highs were high and the lows were so very low. And Eduardo, he started growing more violent and controlling. And his actions were outward and things were happening around her in her home. Well, I don't know why, but on Halloween of 2022, she married Eduardo. She found someone.
Well, this is recent.
Yes, it's very recent. Okay.
Did not pick up on that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I thought this was like 1800s.
Oh, no.
In the last 3 years.
No. And I can't wait to get, you know, when we get to the fact or fiction portion, when I tell you the conclusion, it's going to rock your world. But
okay.
She married him in a church. And she did find someone that would do that for her, quote unquote, legally. So, yes. After the wedding, it took a darker turn, though. And she had said that she felt like she was truly, madly, deeply being possessed by Eduardo. The marriage only lasted 2 years. They
totally
did.
Only.
Yeah. 2 years, man.
Like 2 years. I mean, that's more than most celebrities, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll get to that too. Speaking of celebrities. Oh, just wait. So they divorced in October last year.
Fitting.
Uh-huh. She had two reasons for this divorce. One, he was being extremely and more increasingly so a threatening force in her life. Well, I mean. And number two, he was allegedly having an affair with Marilyn Monroe. Is the story true? Well, oh, we're gonna talk about that. But before we get there, it wouldn't be true macabre fashion without going around the world and giving a little historical background on some things. So before we get into fact or fiction time, we're going to talk about the concept of you bury the dead and sometimes you can marry them too. All right. So let's get into the last segment. Is marrying the dead a thing? Why don't we look at
Sounds like yes.
Yes. Yes. And multiple cultures around the world do it, believe it or not. I'll read bits from an article that I saw from AmericanMarriageMinistries.org. And they kind of break it down in good detail. I won't read the entirety of the article, just what we need to know about these three different cultures. And we're first going to go to China. So the article reads, marrying the dead has a long history in China, and the arrangements can vary from practical to paranormal. These ceremonies are similar to those between the living, including gifts, decorations, and a wedding officiant, normally a shaman in those cases. While ghost marriages are less common in China than they once were, they still do exist, and there's a few stories of modern ceremonies that are definitely involving corpse theft. And
this doesn't feel consensual to me.
No, it's not. I feel like this is a huge violation. This is actually a topic, I think I was mentioning it to you a while ago when I started writing this, that the concept of ghost marriages in China deserves its own episode. That's how deep this goes.
Oh,
between
wow.
Between the culture and the true crime aspect that is still going on today with this is crazy. You've heard okay. of human trafficking. There's also corpse trafficking. But we won't necessarily get into most of that here because it's deep. So that definitely deserves its own episode. But going back to the ministry's article. So in some regions, daughters who remained unmarried for too long were considered an embarrassment to their parents.
Unmarried?
Unmarried. Oops, that's me.
Well, I know. In some cultures, like, they'll tie you up and whip you. And it's like, yeah. How does that help the situation?
Right.
You
right.
know, it's not your fault.
Oh, I know. Oh, man. I know we talked about this before, but like, if we lived at any other time, I would so be dead by now. Or in an asylum, because I'd be this weird spinster lady.
I think most of us would be dead if we lived in the Victorian era.
Dude, yes. Yes.
Or committed.
Or committed. God, these aging brides, that's how they describe this. Aging probably meaning like 16,
17.
23. Yeah, exactly. were frequently married off to spirits of suitable men to spare them the unbearable fate of spinsterhood. My God, what a fate. Sounds pretty fun. Just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, you can only see our faces if you're on Patreon. But yeah. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Sorry, my fiance's like, what? No.
Yeah, granted, we're both fine. In serious relationships and long-term now,
exactly.
So
it's fine.
They love us. They get it.
Yeah, they totally
they know
how
it is.
Right. This would also benefit the families for both sides, the departed's family and the living bride's family. Sometimes it's also a living husband. That is also a very frequent incident of this type of marriage over there as well. But there would be benefits to both families from this. It normally was due to lineage and wanting to make sure that wealth and kind of wills were passed along in the right direction and who would inherit what and all of that jazz. So some of it is a little more transactional, but some of it's because they had to stay committed to the ghost husband. No dating, no anything. You were in this solitude because you also had to take care of your husband too, or wife, depending on what side the marriage fell. So in other areas, tradition insisted that an older brother must marry before the younger brother, even if the older brother happened to be dead, which imagine how that went and goes. Families would often marry these deceased siblings off to suitable brides so that the younger man could then go and start courting someone else and go through with nuptials. Sometimes they're so strict that the younger sibling can't even go and date people until this is done. But some Chinese ghost marriages aren't only practical, sometimes they're sweetly supernatural too. And when the spirit of the dead man contacts a medium, someone who connects the spirit realm to the living, they are normally known as the paranormal matchmakers of situations. This asking the spirits if they would like to be married to this person. And normally the medium is also in charge of arranging a symbolic ceremony for the living spouse. Oh yeah, it's very intricate and it goes really deep. So the concept of the Chinese ghost marriage needs its own episode for sure. Our next stop is surprisingly France, believe it or not. I was very shocked about this one. So they call it postmortem matrimony, also called posthumous marriage. It became a legal, which I'm very shocked at, but it became a legality in France in the 50s, like 1950s, believe it or not. I would have thought like 1800s, maybe.
Yeah.
But following a terrible accident that ended up killing a fiance of a would-be bride before the couple could be wed, super distraught, she confronted the local government to ask for a very specific exception and request to still marry her deceased fiance. And the local government did agree. And afterwards, it became a lawful concept. Like, you can still do this. The tradition of posthumous wedlock continued over the years, with hundreds of mourning partners petitioning the French president for the right to marry by proxy. And from the wedding to take place, a couple must have had to have been engaged before death. So that this is where it is different from China. And the president must forward the request along for approval by local officials in the area where they would have gotten married. And then the family of the deceased would have to also agree to it and sign. Like, it's still kind of a marital contract.
Yeah. I kind of get it in this instance, you know, because they were already planning to get married and then something tragic happens. You know, I get it in this case.
Yep. Absolutely. I would agree with that. It makes more sense for that, I feel like, but I mean, cultural differences as well, you know, but yeah. I believe you can still do this in France today.
Wow.
Yeah. But now, we're not just going to a region, we're going to a religion. Let's talk about the Mormons. Who knew? The Church of Latter-day Saints views marriage as an eternal bond, meaning that when two people decide to marry in the eyes of the church, their souls are sealed together forever. And what else? Well, joining with another in marriage is an essential requirement for getting into the highest levels of the celestial kingdom of heaven, says Mormons. And if someone isn't sealed to another person, they can't get in, which is like, what? And won't be able to spend eternity with their family in heaven unless they are married. Mormons are big on the sealing the deal. Unfortunately, not all couples have the opportunity to have their union sealed in their lifetime. That's where marriage for the dead comes in as a solution. A younger generation performs posthumous sealings for the parents and the other ancestors, offering them a ticket to blissful afterlife. These posthumous sealings don't just unite the couple themselves, they also unite the entire family lines together. Kind of similar with the Chinese tradition of this. Temple sealings, marriages within the church itself, bind generations together too, connecting ancestral lines throughout the centuries. And this is the only way that somebody is allowed into their version of heaven, is if everybody's married. And they are very quick to act if that person wasn't able to marry before their passing. Families are normally very desperate to make sure that they get somebody connected with them as soon as possible. Does this actually exist in these cultures? Well, the wait is over. It's time that we dive into fact or fiction. But let's go in the order. The Anna Baker story. Do you think it's real or do you think it's fiction?
The story, the whole story itself or portions of it?
I'll leave that up.
Are you asking?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like on this one, it could be, it kind of fits into that classic lady in white trope of stories that have happened all over the world, different cultures, different time frames. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say fake.
So the 5 points. Yeah, 5 points for Hallie. The mansion is real. You can go and visit it. The Bakers were a real family. The love story between Anna and Mr. Steamy Steelworker is not. Anna Baker never married. This is true, but that's not the reason why. So as for the dress, is it real? The dress is real, but it's not Anna Baker's dress. They don't actually know who it belonged to. When they ended up taking it over to make the place a museum, it was just in the house, and they decided it was really beautiful, and it really is. So they put it on display. nobody knows who originally owned it. They did try to debunk the paranormal activity that was happening in Anna's room with the dress. There's multiple reasons why things were happening with it. So the reason why the display case seemed to move when people were in the room was because of loose floorboards. Makes sense.
Okay.
It's an old place.
Yeah.
The dress did move by itself behind the display case. But the reason for that was the display case itself wasn't airtight. There was a draft that was coming through, and it was very intense of a draft for a display, so much so that it deteriorated the dress so much, and the dress was exposed to the elements as well because of that open seal, that in the early 2000s, they had to remove that dress from the display because of the deterioration of the dress itself. So that's a big fake right there. Now we have to talk about La Pascualita. Do you think it's fact or do you think it's fiction?
This one, I mean, obviously I looked up the pictures, but yeah. It was a story that I had heard before.
Yeah.
To some degree. So for me, I mean, it's fact. The place exists. Mm-hmm. That mannequin exists. As far as some of the other stuff, I don't know the backstory per mm-hmm. se, but that mannequin is there. It is real.
Yeah. I am also still on the fence about it. Just seeing the pictures and knowing what the employees see and their, I mean, that lady that was interviewed about changing her and stuff. I mean, she really, you can tell she does believe that. For this story, I read an analysis that was done by a mortician. I'm still on the fence about it, but they went into detail about the display of the mannequin. And while the details of the model are very uncanny, it's highly unlikely they believe that this is an actual embalmed corpse. And that's based on the age of the mannequin, the elements that it's consistently exposed to in the display window constantly for decades, and the amount of upkeep that would be needed to make sure the body would stay as well preserved as it is very highly improbable for La Pascualita, because the amount of money that it would take to keep a real embalmed person looking great, standing up in a window when she's getting two dress changes done a week, they would have to be probably billionaires, because there's other people around the world that are embalmed that take actual full-time teams of scientists to make sure that that's their job, to keep the bodies updated. Sometimes they have to remove limbs and replace them. That's just, the body breaks down.
Yeah. Not only that, but I don't know if people realize how heavy an embalmed body is.
Yeah.
Embalming a body adds so much weight. So
yeah.
For me, that part of it being a real body, for me, wasn't a question. My thinking is, you know how you can have an idea or a thought or a legend and it sort of becomes this supernatural thing?
Yeah.
Almost like, you know, certain haunted dolls that are out there yes. and certain things like that. I feel like this fits more into that kind of a category.
Agreed.
That it's kind of taken on this weird life of its own because people have given it life, have given it energy, and have, I know I'm getting very woo-woo, but yeah.
No, but we hear about that a lot. And something that I didn't touch on during the story, people claim that she moves on her own when she's
That's
not
creepy.
Being watched. Yeah. And honestly, we've heard about that kind of stuff so many times that that seems more probable to me, as odd as that sounds, because of just the upkeep that would need to be done. And not to mention, not only does it take a full team and so much money and all that jazz, but the smell.
Oh, it'd be horrific.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody would even step a foot into that shop if right. it was a true.
No one would want to be shopping for their dress at that place.
No, no way.
Yeah.
But I will say the hands still get me. I've never seen such detailed hands on a mannequin. Not
it's
even a wax
gross.
Figure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty gross.
It is. And for that being something that was put in the window in the 30s, I know that they went into way more detail with things back then, but I've worked retail. I've never seen hands like that on a mannequin before. Okay. Yeah. Moving on. The Old Faithful Inn's ghost. Fact or fiction?
I'm going to go fact on this one, just to change it up a bit, and because there were witnesses, maybe.
Yeah. Well, here's where it gets kind of weird. It's actually fiction.
Okay.
But there's a big story with that.
Right? It's a good story.
I was like, damn. I know. It got me for a hot second because I was like, what? I would have thought that was real. This story was actually made up by the former owner of the inn.
Well, there you go.
In. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. It's always been a major tourist attraction, but as things developed and other things came into the Yellowstone National Park for people to stay, for people to see, he wanted more attraction. So this story was born. But here's where the spine tingly thing happens. People still report seeing a woman dressed in white slowly descending the stairs with her head tucked under her arm without them knowing the story at all.
Okay.
So what are they actually seeing?
Yeah. Again, that's what I don't know. Can an idea create something that wasn't there before? I don't know.
Right? Exactly. A lot of that this episode. It's kind of odd. All right. Drum roll. The Eduardo story. Is it fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fact.
So this is actually the story of a singer, an English singer-songwriter named Ricarda. Have you heard of her?
No.
So this story actually exists. Ricarda is an actual person. She's a famous singer-songwriter in England. And yes, she still claims that she was married to Eduardo the Ghost. She has been interviewed on multiple TV shows for multiple magazines. And she is very consistent with her story about Eduardo. Well, let me read you a little excerpt from the Irish Star that was published last October about her divorce. The title of the article is "Woman Who Married Ghost Getting Divorced After Seeing Him Flirting with Marilyn Monroe's Spirit at an LA Hotel." Brocarda, age 40, a singer-songwriter, says she got hitched to the devilishly handsome spirit of a Victorian soldier named Eduardo, whom she met when he showed up in her bedroom one day. The union ended, though, after allegations of his wandering eye. It seems a divorce can't have kept them apart. Recently, on what would have been their second anniversary, she supposedly spotted Eduardo wooing the spirit of actress Marilyn Monroe at an LA hotel. The vocalist said, quote, "I was slightly miffed, to be honest, as Eduardo didn't even give me a second glance. I was wearing my favorite dress and felt on top of the world until that ghost love rat reared his haggard, haunted face and ruined my evening. I felt the compelling urge to warn Marilyn about what an untamable nightmare Eduardo is." And when things were getting downhill in their marriage in 2023, she sought a marriage counseling with a medium. She says Eduardo was not taking the counseling seriously and Ricarda had enough, and she resorted to exorcism, which she allegedly went through with. She said in one interview that she knew something had to be done when he would make noises that sounded like a baby shrieking. I'm sorry, but that's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, no.
No. Was this a publicity stunt or was it real? Either way, probably not a great idea to mess around with ghosts or entities like that. We've talked about possessions and the phases and appearances that they take on, and whether this is fake or not. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, do you really just want to even play that game and invite anything in like that to begin with, even if it starts as a joke? If anyone needed a paranormal cock block, I'm sorry, but it would have been Ricarda. Because, girl, no.
It is really sad, though. If it's a mental health thing, you know, that's one thing. And that's really sad in itself, too. I don't wish that on anyone. No,
exactly.
Exactly. But it also feels like if she was this sort of public figure, maybe her career wasn't going so well, and right. she just was trying to get in the limelight in some way. So there's a lot of things that could be at right. play here.
Right. Exactly. I came across that, though, when I was doing research. I was like, this has got to be one of the stories. Oh, my gosh. This has to be one of the stories. And she's yeah. not the only one. There's multiple oh, yeah. people.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which may be its own episode.
Yeah, I think it might have to be. Maybe in order to lighten up when we do the ghost marriage thing for the Chinese culture, maybe that will be at the end to like lighten the mood because, oh man, yeah, it's dark. So let's talk about those death marriages. Do you think that that's truly fact or truly fiction?
I believe it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's all true. The facts about the ghost marriages that I shared from literally all of China, France, and the Mormon religion are fact. The topic of ghost marriages in China, oh man, is that a spiral and has been going on for centuries. We're definitely going to have to cover that. But okay, are you feeling a little like I treated you or tricked you more than I treated you for this first spooky season episode? Do you feel a little like down and out because a lot of this was fiction?
No, I mean, I still love a good ghost story.
Right?
So.
Right. I tried to sweeten the deal a little bit by putting in some macabre morsels about weddings because overall, a lot of traditions for weddings that we still see today have very, very dark origins that are super macabre. So they're so worth sharing with you. So I wanted to give you the real goodies at the end. So
let's do it.
Yeah. Some wedding traditions are kind of weird when you think about it. And you wonder, why do people actually do this for a wedding? You know, what is the pomp and circumstance? Yeah, let's talk about that. We're going to jump around to different cultures, times throughout this. It just as a funny banter back and forth because some of this shit is hilarious. Let's start with Viking culture. When you got married, you weren't just marrying your future spouse. You were marrying the whole family. Yeah. It was really intense. So intense that prior to any arrangement, both families were involving lawyers. Which is
okay, really that's progressive.
Right. Right. They were surprisingly super progressive for the time yeah. and everything. The wedding process in this culture took a long time. They kind of invented the concept of the long engagement. Sometimes you would only wait a year, which, I mean, that's kind of common for today, but sometimes these transactions could take over 3 years, which, yeah, long engagements, sometimes it's worth it, helps you save and all that. Traditionally, Fridays were the day to get married for Vikings, and they were always in the summertime, just because of the weather. And you can thank, we're going to another place now, you can thank the frickin' Spartans for bachelor parties. Yeah, they were the inventors of the
debauchery. That does not surprise me.
Oh man, there are some paintings that actually depict the idea of what goes down, but it was like very secretive. It was kind of like Vegas for the Spartans. It was like, what happens here stays here. And it apparently is very wild. I want you to guess when bachelorette parties became a thing.
Oh, probably way in the future.
Yes.
Like Victorian era?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Further?
Even more recently.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Bachelorette parties did not become a thing until the equality movement, sexual revolution of the 1960s.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? And when it first began, it wasn't what we think of it today. The craziness and elaborate planning of a bachelorette party today, we can thank for the 80s. They were the ones that started making it pretty wild and crazy. So thanks, 80s. Veils had some pretty significant purposes back in the day. They were used as insurance that the groom wouldn't see who he was marrying until it was too late. And that wasn't the only thing. Back in the day, way further back than that, brides wore veils to ward off evil spirits who were trying to curse them and trying to join the two people in giving them a damned marriage. And this stemmed from the Romans. And believe it or not, veils used to be red. In Roman times, they believed that the veil had to look like the bride was on fire in order to scare the spirits away. So they wore red veils that looked like fire, which is, it's kind of badass.
Yeah.
Bridesmaids, they really, if you think bridesmaids put a lot of work in now, you should just hear about what they had to do back in the day. But we'll talk about them in different staggered categories because they did a lot for the bride. Why don't we talk about bouquets for a hot second? Bouquets have been a thing for a very long time. You love seeing the lovely bunches of flowers and yes, how nice. But do you know what they used to hold during wedding ceremonies?
No.
Herbs and spices. Yeah, there's multiple reasons for this. Some favorites were garlic and dill. There was... These were also used to ward off evil spirits and also some major BO. Nobody wants a smelly wedding party. These herbs and spices would also be used later for the wedding party's meal. They'd be cooked up okay. with it and they'd have to consume it. And the reason for this is they believed that these really tasty herbs and spices would trigger some moods for the bride and groom.
Like aphrodisiacs, yeah. basically. Yeah.
What is more sexy than a fucking spice rack? The ring and the giving away tradition. Heard and talked about this so many times, but we know that it was kind of strictly a business transaction back in the day, like literally. And we can thank the Romans for that too. Women were given two rings in ancient Roman culture. There was an iron ring that would be worn at home. And then there would be a golden ring for whenever she went out in public. But diamond rings weren't actually popular until the 1940s. It was thanks to a very well done marketing campaign. But yeah, we're going to go back to bridesmaids now. Bridesmaids, poor ladies. So nowadays, bridesmaids have the freedom to pick the types of dresses, maybe even the shades of different colors, and they look gorgeous and everything. Well, that was not always the case back in the day. Bridesmaids used to have to dress the exact same way as the bride because their job was to act as a decoy. Whether you were trying to deflect evil spirits or literally try to avoid capture in the bridal caravan on the way to the groom because people would kidnap the bride. So this was a defense mechanism to try to keep the bride safe, meaning some brides were really like putting everything they had on the line because sometimes they would get kidnapped and stuff because they thought they were the bride. They went through it. Other times, brides, they just, most of the time, I mean, they had a long distance. When you were thinking about it being a business transaction and your family was joining with another family, oftentimes you were having to go a far way away to get to your groom. And people knew this. So you had a lot of highwaymen and bandits that were living on the road that would seek this type of caravan out for that reason, because they were coming with every riches that they owned and everything else. So, man, talk about scary. We can also date that back to the Romans. Thank you. The best man was invented centuries ago. Because if the bride's family didn't approve of the marriage, the groom would kidnap the bride, and the best man would be appointed as the defender of the groom from the bride's family, sometimes coming okay. to fight.
All right.
Yeah. Can anybody say historical cringies? If you were a goth, Visigoth, or a Hun, or marrying one, it shouldn't come as a surprise to see that the wedding party was fully armed because you never knew when a brawl was breaking out. Wedding dresses for a very long time were not white. In fact, they were almost every other color but white. And if someone was in a white dress, it was always a very light color dress on their wedding day. But if they were in a lighter shade or white, this was just basically to show that they were wealthy, because at the time, only wealthy people could own light clothing or white because it was very expensive to keep them clean back in the day. And a crazy fact about the bouquet, the reason why they get tossed is because back in medieval Europe, the toss was meant as a defense mechanism. Oh yeah, because the bride, after she was married and coming back down the aisle, she literally had to run because all of the female attendants would grab at her dress and start tearing it away from her body.
Why?
It was literally believed that it was a talisman of fertility.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So she'd just be naked before she got to the end of the aisle, basically. Yeah,
exactly. So wedding dresses back in the day, they tried to make the dresses to accommodate for that happening because it was literal pieces. Sometimes the bride would be tackled, apparently, allegedly. It's awful. Yeah. The wedding dress, it was built for action, let's just say. So the bouquet would be tossed to try to distract the girls because they also wanted the bouquet because it was another talisman of sorts, but still. Dang. The other thing that comes, we're finally getting to Victorian era. Let's break down the phrase, something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. This is wild. The something blue was normally the bride's garter, and this was seen as a charm to again ward off evil intentions, evil spirits, and particularly those of glares shot at the bride from the attendants when she walked down the aisle, because it was said that if she was given the death glare or a glare of any sort, it would take her fertility away. That was a thing. So something borrowed is a little bit more. You would borrow a garment that was normally an undergarment from a woman who had already given birth. And this was done as a trick to ward off evil spirits because apparently a bride would be developing her fertility during the wedding ceremony. And so if an evil spirit thought she was already fertile, they would give up and be like, "Meh, she's already fertile. I don't have to do anything here." Otherwise, if not, then they were going to take that fertility away. The something new was a promise of good luck in your new life as husband and wife in England. This is where you kind of see the item like a sixpence in the shoe, if you've ever heard of that. It's a talisman to bring wealth and prosperity to the couple back in the day. Funny joke, I found a sixpence at an estate sale a couple summers ago. So maybe I'll throw it in my shoe.
I remember us talking about that on Patreon.
Yeah. What? This is crazy. Oh, it's meant to be. All right, let's get into some more really, truly macabre-esque wedding adornments. So speaking of, and the promises for the future, let's talk again about Vikings for a hot second. Both the bride and groom would go through a cleansing period before their wedding. The bride would have to go through all of her items and clothing and get rid of any item that defined her as a maiden. It was a symbol of her going into her new life. Some things would be stored away for her future children. She didn't have to get rid of everything. Some of it, though, had to go away in a keepsake box. Then she would bathe. And her female family members would join her in the bathhouse and kind of instruct her on what was to come and how to be a wife in life and all that jazz. But during this bath, she was made to sweat a ton. They would put hot rocks in the bottom of the bathing basin, kind of like a sauna of sorts, to get rid of all of the toxins. Yeah. And it was said that it was cleansing her of all of her maiden toxins. But something else to help the bride sweat, they would actually use switches on her back to open pores. Can you imagine? Ugh. It was to get all of the wrong essences out of her body. So, yeah, it wasn't necessarily all spa time in there. Before the groom could get married, he had to go through kind of a similar process, but his was definitely way more macabre. In order to become a man, how more Viking can you get? He had to go through a death and rebirthing ceremony, of course. And that involved all of the groom's married male relatives would join him in this. They would go to an ancestral burial ground for their family. The groom-to-be would have to dig up an old family member, take the sword out of the burial chamber, and he would take that to his new bride-to-be. And this was a symbol of him becoming a man and being ready to be a husband and a protector and all of that jazz. After he obtained this sword, literally going to grave rob, he would also then go and bathe. And his male relatives would then come in and teach him the ways of being a husband and all of that. So this would then continue to their ceremony. What's pretty badass about this is the groom would offer the bride the sword that he unburied, and he would give her ring to her upon the sword when passing it. The bride would do the same thing. Normally, the sword that she would give was from her father's collection, and she would pass her ring to him on the sword that was given to him. And it was a vow of symbolism from each other for promise and protection. But these wedding ceremonies began with animal sacrifices. And if it was a blood sacrifice, the blood would then be sprinkled on both the bride and groom. Very, very macabre. But the last thing that I have for you. Why do we have what we have for our modern weddings? Well, we can thank Queen Victoria for that one. She was the very first to wear all pure white for her wedding, including her bridesmaids. She also was in charge of changing those just tasty herbs and spices. She was the one that exchanged them for flowers. Thank you, Queen Victoria. So instead of smelling like a rotisserie chicken, you can hold some pretty beautiful blooms. Thank you for paving the way for that, Queen Victoria.
Can your bouquet just be dill, garlic cheese curds, and...
What if? What if it's one of those big elaborate Bloody Marys on whipped cheese?
Oh, yeah. An edible bouquet for your wedding.
Right? Oh, my gosh. That'd be so hilarious. That'd be very Wisconsin.
Throw it to me.
Just gently pass it. Hey, this goes to Hallie. Pass it down. Yeah, I just can't imagine. But I get it. And flowers. Oh. Well, I now pronounce this episode macabre and macabre. That's what I've got for you today.
That was a good one. It went places I didn't expect. So I learned a lot. And yeah, I'm pumped up for your matrimony, your ceremony. Now I'm going to be thinking about all these little things as we go throughout.
I know. I'm going to be thinking that same day. I can only imagine waiting in my little hiding spot and be like, herbs and spices. Herbs
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Dude, that's 3 weeks away.
Yeah. Yeah, when this comes out, it will be the week of happening. So
yeah, it is insane. I picked up my dress last night. Oh my gosh, I can't wait for you to see it. I hope he doesn't listen right now. He's normally a little behind anyway, so hopefully.
Yeah, keep a secret.
Yeah, I'll have to tell you about what it looks like.
I'm excited too.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm excited to. I mean, we've been together for a long time. We've been engaged for a long time. And it just can't believe it's happening. It's crazy. But it's been fun doing this as an episode because we're going to have such a time. Maybe we'll be able to post a couple pictures or something for everybody.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Facebook group. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
It'll only be the second time we've been together in person. So, I know. You know,
it's going to be a blast. Oh, my gosh. I can't wait. Yeah. But that's what I've got for you. Happy spooky season. We are just gearing up for more to come, and we hope you are enjoying it. We hope that this season is all that you want it to be. Thank you guys so much for coming to hang out with us today and indulge our funny fact fiction game and all that. We love you guys so much, and we're so excited for all of our new listeners. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, have fun. Be safe, be kind, and we will shock you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.